Jason Burmis has the power of information.
Today's news talk.
TNT.
Looking out for number one, one of my favorite t-shirts that I had during my college days, and I still live by that. Now you're going, Jason, you selfish bastard. Look, folks, the bottom line is, if I'm looking out for me, I'm looking out for everybody out there. And that's really why Julian Assange and even what's being done to Donnie T or Alex Jones on social media in the past, that's why it's important. Look, you cannot look out for yourself if you are a complete and total sociopath, because you don't see that your self-interests lie in the self-interests of everybody. It's the crabs in a bucket analogy. Now, crabs, you get them in a bucket, a lot of them will get up to the top. They'll almost get out. But then other crabs see that, they don't like it, and they end up pulling you down. We have to stop pulling each other down. And when you look at that Assange case, one of the aspects that the, I would say, predator class in association with the military-industrial complex has been successful at is that perception versus reality. The perception that Julian Assange is a rapist, the perception that Julian Assange is a puppet of Putin, that is not the reality. However, through this massive psychological operations campaign, they have been able to successfully, in a number of minds, what? Assassinate the character of an individual that never put out any fake information. 100% reality record. Let's roll it back and think about that for a second. We know that CNN, MSNBC, CBS, ABC, Fox News, they don't get it right 100% of the time. I don't think they get it right 50% of the time. Now, every so often you get a print publication and they write a story so egregious that eventually in the back of the paper, in a line this big, they make an apology and they correct something, but it's never the headline again. Let me give you an example. When hydroxychloroquine was all but demonized, once Donnie T came out and said, we've got great treatments, we've got the hydroxychloroquine, we talk about these things, it's going to be great. No, it wasn't. In fact, what was it? The Lancet, the experts. There's this study from the Lancet, and hydroxychloroquine doesn't work on anything. It's the worst thing ever. Front page everywhere. Hydroxychloroquine, fake. Hydroxychloroquine doesn't work. Every talking head, Rachel Maddow, Chris Hayes, right wingers galore, all of them talked about it. Took a couple weeks, but oh, wait a minute. That wasn't a real paper. It wasn't peer reviewed. They had to retract it from the Lancet itself as such. You see that retraction on the front news? Lancet paper, wrong. Hydroxychloroquine may be effective. No. Instead, you were told nothing was safe and effective other than the hate and lie shots that the military-industrial complex helped produce via Operation Warp Speed and their strategic mRNA collaboration project with other greats like BARDA, AstraZeneca, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Institute Pasteur. And I brought this up with an individual who recently did a documentary film positing that it was actually Dr. Birx that was the driving force of these policies. And immediately it went to, sounds like a lot of QAnon. Hey, how about the Illuminati? And I had to stop this guy and say, excuse me, sir. No, these are actual organizations and actual documentation. I go, the Moderna partnership with DARPA has been on their website since 2013. And then I was told that none of these policies were actually in white papers. Total lie. In fact, WikiLeaks in 2009 published a series of CDC recommendations for the swine flu, and guess what it was? Masks, quarantines, forced shutdowns, medicines and therapies, drugs that did not have to work. Okay? I have this on video of me reading the WikiLeaks document. How long ago? I don't know. A decade plus before what happened? The COVID-1984 nightmare. These people were clearly ready for the dry run. Oh, I'm sorry, folks. I'm looking for my little read-along. Give me 1 second. I had it up here, but I'm a moron, and I changed it. I want to read it. I want to tell people. I'm now like 30 seconds deep into when I wanted to do it, and now I'm feeling terrible here. Give me one more minute, guys. I never do this. Usually, I've got everything up and running. And no, it's not that one. Too many emails to go through. Payments, blah, 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 blah. Look. Follow us on social media. Sorry I missed the second read. Give us a donation. We need it. TNT Radio needs to not just survive, but thrive with your support. So consider supporting us. We'll get it right tomorrow night, but we always get it right when Adam Clark comes on. So we got him coming up in the next segment back after this.
It's the stuff.
What citizen wouldn't want to make American great again?
People are talking about.
Vilifying MAGA, it's just not going to work.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
On Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court appeared inclined to dismiss an obstruction charge related to the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot, which could have broader implications for similar charges against former President Donald Trump. Here with the story, joining me once again to bring the ruckus is TNT News producer Adam Clark. Adam, this might actually be good news. We discussed the January 6th cases and this in particular last night with Alicia Powell of the Gateway Pundit. What do you got for us?
Yeah, nothing concrete yet, but I do like to see when the news reports and use what I consider to be strongly worded openings. Like here's one from, who is this? New Hampshire union leader. They opened the story with, "The Supreme Court seemed deeply divided Tuesday over a challenge to a federal law that prosecutors used to charge more than 350 people, yada, yada, yada." Other outlets are reporting it as that they appeared to be leaning in favor of this one particular individual. This is all over the charges for one Joseph Fisher, who is a former police officer accused of getting swept up in all of that. Yes, one of the innocent bystanders in the Fedsurrection of 2021. The Supreme Court, they are potentially leaning towards just dismissing this obstruction charge, which has been levied against Mr. Fisher. The decision could have significant ramifications for the prosecution of Donald Trump, since he faces a similar charge. And I think this is where you're leaning with the, this could be good news. This could have some serious, like a ripple effect. So Fisher charged with corruptly obstructing an official proceeding. Aha, that's the thing. Specifically, the congressional certification of the presidential election. He challenged a lower court's decision to uphold the charge. The Supreme Court, with a conservative majority of 6-3, seemed receptive to arguments questioning the breadth of the obstruction statute under the 2002 Sarbanes-Oxley Act, initially enacted post-Enron scandal. Yeah, y'all remember that. Solicitor General Elizabeth Preliger defended the application of the statute, acknowledging its use in various contexts beyond evidence tampering, though she admitted the unprecedented nature of applying it to actions like those seen on January 6th. Preliger explained to Justice Clarence Thomas, quote, "We have enforced it in a variety of prosecutions that don't focus on evidence tampering. Now, I can't give you an example of enforcing it in a situation where people have violently stormed a building to prevent an official proceeding, a specified one, from occurring," end quote. On the opposing side, Jeffrey Green, representing Fisher, argued for a limited application of the law, asserting that the Justice Department had overreached by applying an evidence tampering statute to Fisher's actions during the riot. Green stated, quote, "The Jan 6 prosecutions demonstrate that there are a host of felony and misdemeanor crimes that cover the alleged conduct. A Sarbanes-Oxley-based Enron-driven evidence tampering statute is not one of them," end quote. And then I'll share what Justice Neil Gorsuch, his highlighted concerns about the potential overreach of the law. He questioned whether nonviolent disruptions could similarly fall under this statute, which carries a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison. The liberal justices, however, challenged this narrow interpretation. For instance, Justice Sonia Sotomayor drew an analogy with theater policies against disruptions, suggesting that the statute's broader applicability, while Justice Elena Kagan criticized the statute's vagueness, prompting Green to admit, quote, "Certainly the statute could be written more precisely." So they seem kind of, you know, divided. So at least we're not like nail in the coffin. Yes, this is going to stand and then we're going to stick it to Mr. Trump. So this could work out in everybody's favor eventually, Jason. But what say you?
To me, it's less about Trump and about all of these other people that are still serving hard time in prison because of these statutes and add-ons. Again, nobody went in there thinking they were going to stop Congress from certifying the election. That's imagination land. I can't emphasize that enough. There was no coordinated effort to overturn an election or physically harm anybody, let alone specific members of the House and the Senate. That's not a real thing. So now let's talk about some more imagination land, Adam. Let's posit that everything that the Democrats and the establishment media was true, that armed lunatics stormed the Capitol building and took over the government. Does anybody think they run anything afterwards? I mean, seriously, let's say the worst of the worst happened. You actually did have trained armed teams going into the Capitol to stop the certification of the election and maybe do harm to individuals in government, in their staff. If that had occurred, which it did not by any stretch of the imagination, if you think those people have successfully overthrown the government, you're a little slow. In fact, you might want to be in the next Dumb and Dumber sequel, because that's not a real thing. We have had contingency plans for much worse for decades, really starting with the introduction of nuclear power and the Manhattan Project, aka the nuclear bomb. And those programs have only been strengthened and internalized over the past several decades, really strengthened during the Reagan administration under great people like Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, and others via the National Programs Office. So I think we have to stop playing into Pretendville, and hopefully this ruling will start that process with these individuals and people that are serving right now 5 years, 10 years, 11 years, 15 years in prison for crimes that would normally be a slap on the wrist, a ticket, and possibly probation. Maybe we can get there. I'm hopeful. Listen, again, I had Alicia on yesterday. I was doubtful we were going to get an even semi-positive ruling like the one we just saw. I'm keeping my eye on it. And quite frankly, Adam, we need to project this, because just like I entered this hour looking out for number one, if we're not looking out for these people, again, those same type of charges could eventually be used against any one of us.
Yeah. And, you know, it's largely going to make a bigger case against Trump. Obviously, that's the other important thing here, that, you know, because if they can prove somehow legally by setting precedent with all these other people that he did all of those imaginary things that you just laid out, then, yeah, that's game over for Trump. They don't have to worry about all these other little cases that they've been dragging him through the mud over. So this would be the big one. I know all eyes are on the criminal cases right now. Is it multiple cases that are criminal? Yeah. Because it's 34 counts, felony counts. Yeah. So that the one that he's going through right now is pretty important too. But I think he'll make it through that one. This is the bigger issue at hand here, ultimately.
I think this one's a big one. I think the espionage case down in Florida is a big one. I even think the Georgia cases in regards to being able to hire people around you to question an election and try to find a way to audit it is also very, very big. May we live in interesting times. We certainly do. Adam, kicking butt and taking names. As always, we will see you tomorrow night, brother. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to be talking about this new surveillance legislation that is the icing on the cake, the cherry on top, if you will, of the track trace database society we already live under. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned for more TNT Radio after this.
TNT's Mark Morano.
Only 54% of the residents of Ethiopia have access to electricity.
Wah, wah, wah.
Ethiopia's leaders are making the country go all electric vehicle when nearly half of the population doesn't have access to electricity. That's commitment. My mind is blown. Do you understand what I'm saying? A country which one of the among the poorest in the world is banning gas-powered cars, EV only, no imports. They're doing their part to fight, quote, planet warming pollution, unquote. And almost half the population doesn't even have access to electricity.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
We don't rock, we talk. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we are joined by another TNT Radio host and a buddy of mine, somebody that I've spent some time with over the past couple of years while being on the Reawaken America Tour. Timothy Shea is with us. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for the kind words when I was brought on the network, good sir. Let's talk surveillance. You know, that's a topic that I've been harping on now for decades. I truly do believe we live in a track trace database society. It has been globalized on a multitude of levels, but what we continually see is the legitimization of this government to enable that track trace database society and really utilize it later on to commit lawfare against those that may question the great narrative and not go along to get along, Timothy.
Absolutely. And as a conservative, I reserve my enmity for the Republicans, not the Democrats. The Democrats are going to do what the Democrats are going to do. They've always been the party of totalitarianism. They have an innate fascist reflex that they love to exercise given half a chance. It's the so-called conservative Republicans that really get me upset. You know, Jason, I've been in and around politics for over 50 years. I've never once been stabbed in the back by a Democrat, but I'm like a porcupine with all the knives I've taken from Republicans. These people just live to roll over. They're warmongers. They're all about the deep state, the surveillance state. Give them half a chance, they'll pass any legislation that increases the government's power.
Now, there's a handful out there. You know, I can't stand either party, but on the Republican side, you know, we've often talked about individual. I mean, but how many? A small handful, my friend, that I can put out there. Rand Paul amongst them, Mike Lee, and now Thomas Massie. You know, I think Massie is one of those guys that gets it right the vast majority of the time. But he's being combated within his own party, is he not?
Well, he is. He started, you know, he didn't start out by making friends and influencing people. You know, the first thing he did when he got to Congress is do that little podcast miniseries, The Swamp, in which he exposed how Congress is basically pay to play, that if you want on certain committees, you have to meet certain fundraising commitments. And so they don't like him and he doesn't care. And we love him because he doesn't care.
You know, and not only does he not care, he's one of the most eloquent people out there. There are tales of when they try to pass legislation in the night that he's actually so close that he throws on his running shoes and gets down there himself to ensure that doesn't happen. That's not something you see in modern day politics. So what are your thoughts on this upcoming legislation that obviously takes the track trace database and surveillance state even further? Is this going to be inevitably passed? And once it is there any chance of rolling it back? Because you know as well as I do, incrementally, things seem to get worse based on this issue or that disaster or this crisis. Yet, the things that they put into place are never rolled back, even if they're presented to us as temporary.
Exactly. Just witness the Social Security tax, the income tax. Oh, no, we're not going to tax wages. We're only going to tax the rich guys on their assets. And then all of a sudden, yeah, we're going to tax your wages. Social Security, it's a voluntary program. Now you go to jail if you don't kick in. It happens time after time after time. And now they're asking us essentially, trust us, give us the power. We're not going to use it, Jason. Just, we need it, but we're not going to use it. Give me a break. The only way to roll any of this back is, as I've been advocating for years, reduce the size of the federal government by at least a third.
So if, let's talk about that, because one of the things that I liked via Vivek Ramaswamy was his idea that once he got in there, your Social Security number ends in an odd number, you're fired. Just get rid of half of them on the first day. And I'm like, you know, I'd never thought of that. And I know that there are going to be a lot of people that will argue, well, you're also getting rid of the good guys along with the bad. But you're going to have to do that anyway, because it's just not possible just to get rid of all the bad guys. Obviously, that's going to be a subjective issue. Who's in charge? I think if you start with something like that, you may actually be able to deal a death blow to some of these bureaucracies and hopefully put something better into place. What are your thoughts on that? And if that is the case, should we not see him in a Trump administration? Should Trump be successful?
I've said I'd love to see Vivek as Secretary of Commerce. You know, he'd be overseeing the Patent and Trademark Office. He'd be overseeing a lot of our negotiations. I think he'd be fantastic at that. If not at Commerce, then having the job that Jared had, figuring out how to pare back the federal bureaucracy. I really like the approach of atomizing the DC bubble and moving Department of Interior out to Montana, moving the Department of Agriculture out to Kansas, because these people are so wed to their DC identity. All these little, you know, bureaucratic dweebs that are there essentially running this country with zero oversight and unbelievably waste amounts of wasted money. The best way to get rid of it, I think, with all the civil service laws, you're going to have a hard time firing people. But Congress appropriates money. The executive isn't bound to spend it. And what's the rule for spending? If you don't use it, you lose it. So if they give $16 billion to the IRS and Donald Trump decides not to spend a penny of it, there's $16 billion less in funding for the next year. I really think that this needs to be done. We need to get rid of a lot of agencies. We need to get rid of a lot of executive functions, because our government has overgrown the Constitution by leaps and bounds. Let's just pare it back to constitutional levels, Jason.
You know, I absolutely agree. And when you look at these three-letter agencies that are clearly bureaucracies, I don't think that they've just been recently politicized. I think that they've been outwardly politicized more than ever, but you can go back to the FBI in the days of Martin Luther King Jr. and the smears there during the civil rights movement. You can go through a multitude of CIA corruption, from possible assassinations in the 60s to really the 80s and drug dealing, arms dealing, etc., with those that were supposed to be our enemy, and then really the egregious actions during the War of Terror. Yet they still stand. And one of the most annoying aspects is I do see mainline and sometimes alternative conservative media players acting like this is a new phenomenon. It is not a new phenomenon. I think the new phenomenon is somebody like Trump, however imperfect he is not an establishment politician that's putting out the talking points and the policies that they expect. I want to get your take on that. On the flip side of this break, we're going to hit the news headlines quick. Stay tuned for more TNT Radio Live after this.
Now's a good time to break the big news.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Prosecutors have alleged that former President Donald Trump violated a gag order set by Judge Juan Merchan in the hush money case. The California Highway Patrol issued a stern warning against the tactics used by pro-Palestinian demonstrators who blocked major traffic routes, including the Golden Gate Bridge and Interstate 880. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov has expressed skepticism regarding a proposed Olympic ceasefire during the 2024 Paris Games, a suggestion made by French President Emmanuel Macron.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction,
misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
And have their panties in a wad saying that Donald Trump isn't presidential. Presidential? The proof of the pudding is in the eating. Look at how good things were 4 years ago and look how horrible they are now. And yet these people are out there, Republicans, mostly women, sometimes their cuck husbands, saying, oh, you know, we're respected again on the world stage, though. We are? I don't think so. I think we were a lot more respected and certainly more feared 4 years ago. We had peace in the Middle East 4 years ago. We didn't have Ukraine 4 years ago. I think that people need to get over themselves and embrace the mean tweets, Jason. Mean tweets, that's what we need.
Well, first of all, you know, the mean tweets, that's another talking point, etc. I always, again, talk about perception versus reality. And I led the show today with the fact that, New York City loves Donald Trump. Yes, there are people that have TDS. You're an upstate New York guy. You know that state more often than not actually does support his policies. But he's in the middle of Harlem, and there are children and citizens. They're not booing him. They're not saying, let's go, Brandon. They're saying, 4 more years. 4 more years. Yeah. But again, the media perception is that this guy is Hitler. Joe Biden can't go to a baseball game. Any type of public arena with hundreds or thousands of people that is not prepped for his presence is unhappy when they see him. And the complete opposite, whether it be a UFC fight or showing up to a local pizza parlor, Trump is a rock star. Correct?
Absolutely. And it's not just Joe Biden that people are upset to see. I had a wonderful experience back at the end of February. Jim Boeheim, legendary Hall of Fame coach for Syracuse University, got his name raised to the rafters in between his star players, Carmelo Anthony and Jerry McNamara, Hakeem Warrick. And they had videos that they played for people that couldn't attend the ceremony. Rick Pitino, Calipari, other coaches. And then And you had some local political functionaries, right? And everybody's like, yeah, let's get going. And then Kathy Hochul comes on. Horrible Hochul. Our poor excuse of a governor. Gretchen Whitmer's equally evil twin sister comes on. And the booze cascaded down the rafters in the Loud House like I had not heard since the last Georgetown game. It was so bad that if you go on YouTube and look for Jim Boeheim Day and watch the ceremony, I think the video is about 15 minutes long. Jason, they intercut her video file, the file she sent to Syracuse University to play on the scoreboard, instead of showing what was going on in the arena, because you could start to hear the boos, and then all of a sudden it cuts to Kathy talking. And then at the end, they forgot to cut out the part where the MC, Mike Tirico, an alumnus of the university, says, no more booing today unless I mention Georgetown University. So even he referenced the booing. It was unbelievably loud. There were 25,000 people there. Kathy Hochul is not popular up here, and she's one of ours. She's the former Erie County Clerk, Buffalo. Everybody for years said, you know, we've got too many downstate governors. We need a governor from upstate. Well, we got one, and she's no better.
No, she's not. And she was never popular, right? Let's be honest about there. There's somebody that was 100% installed via a slick move of taking Cuomo out, not for his behavior during the COVID-1984 nightmare, which was utterly criminal and what? Lauded by the mainstream mayor or mainstream media. He was America's governor. He won, entertainment awards and Emmys. He put out a book during this thing. All of that happened. Not only no criminal charges, but when he essentially had to step down, they made it about sexual misconduct and all these gray area issues. They bring this woman in, and I never like to talk about people's physical appearance. Listen, she could lead in bed knobs and broomsticks. She looks like a witch. She acts like a witch. Let's be honest. Then you got Lee Zeldin going against her, right? Listen, I'm no Republican guy. I think Lee BlackRock Zeldin has some problems, okay? Giuliani's son also got into the mix. Obviously didn't get as far as Zeldin did. But I truly do believe that if we had free and fair elections in New York State, Zeldin would have walked away with it, and instead he lost by a few points. And that's another thing, that perception versus reality, that we're not really discussing in her case.
Well, that's why John Zogby, another upstater, he's out of Utica, and he's the man that nailed the 1996 election to the hundredth of a decimal point. He said Republicans need to win by 12 points in order to win. That's how bad the polling is now.
Well, I mean, is it the polling or is it the machines? I mean, is the polling correct?
Well, the polling supports the machine, right? The polling had Biden ahead. So, yeah, of course Biden won in 2020. The polling had him ahead. Well, the polling's off by 20 points or 12 points.
What can we expect this year? What are your thoughts this year? Because obviously most people think it's for a foregone conclusion. This is going to go to whoever the Democratic nominee, presumptively Biden right now, who's not even running. And yet again, go put Joe Biden in the middle of Harlem and let's find out if we have children and people chanting 4 more years or let's go Brandon. And even if that were the case, how would the media handle it? So what do you think coming up in these last couple of minutes we're going to see in this election cycle, especially in the great state of New York?
It's going to go one or two ways. And you're absolutely right. We've got young black men calling him Uncle Trump. We've got young black women calling him Daddy Trump. They love him. Democrats don't know what to do with this. So they're either going to let him win and then crater the economy, start a war somehow, blame him for everything, just like they did in the first administration. And, or, you know, we got 1.725 million illegals voting in Texas. Let that sink in. 1.725 million illegal voter registrations in Texas. And Texas is just one state that's a problem. So if they want to cheat this thing through, they'll cheat this thing through.
Well, I fully expect them to at least try to cheat this thing through. And unfortunately, with the results of 2020 and the overall mantra that you no longer have standing for the court system to even see the evidence to try and audit the election is not a good one, my friend. Timothy, we are running out of time. Let people know where they can check out your show and support your work right here on TNT Radio.
6 to 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time with Brian Hesher McClain, State of the Nation. Tune in, contribute on the chat room. We'll love to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And again, thank you for the kind words on me coming over. When we come back, we've got Billboard Chris. We're going to get an update on this Australian hate speech trial, really becoming one of my favorite regular guests here on the program. You're not going to want to miss it. Final segment of the Jason Burmes Show here at TNTRadio.live after this.
Hi. I'm your retirement fear, but don't be scared. You're still in pre-retirement.
Pre-retirement? Does that mean I have more time to plan?
Precisely. Here, this is pre-retirement.org.
Retirement savings options?
Oh.
Potential tax breaks?
Yep. Boo.
Oh, I could build up savings for my side hustle. This isn't scary. I'm doing it.
You got this.
Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go, but I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there, providing hot meals, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding.
To learn more, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Clear and concise. This is the Jason Burmes Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
Final segment of the program. We couldn't have a better guest with us. We got Billboard Chris, and we're going to be talking about the absurdity of these hate speech laws across the globe, especially in Australia, and the budgets that go along with them. He is an activist, pundit, and somebody that is challenging the absurdity globally in 2024. He is Billboard Chris. Sir, thank you for joining us. Let's talk your case. For those that do not know, you put out a post that was censored by the Australian government. You refused to bend the knee. You said, no, I'm not going to have this stand. We now have a ruling in the case and your appeal. Take us through it.
Sure. So I tweeted out an article from the Daily Mail about Teddy Cook. This is a woman in Australia who now says she's a man. She's had a double mastectomy. She promotes bondage and bestiality and says trans-identified people have better sex when they're high on drugs. And this person has been appointed to a panel on the World Health Organization to draft the healthcare policy for these people who are struggling, for these trans-identified people who are struggling. So I named her a woman because she is one. And I said that people who belong in psychiatric wards shouldn't be writing the policy for people who belong in psychiatric wards, because this person, with her bondage and bestiality and all that, clearly has some psychiatric issues. It's a bit of a caustic tweet, yes, but it's fully my right to say that. This is a political figure, and it's someone who's going to be harming kids. So she's fair game. Anyway, the e-safety commissioner, the censorship czar in Australia, ordered Twitter to take down my post, or else they could face a $782,500 fine. Twitter has geo-blocked it in Australia. They say they're going to sue. Twitter has said they're going to sue, or X, I should say. But I'm also filing an appeal, and I just filed it today. So it's 11 pages long. It's up on my Twitter account right now. And they can either take down the notice to remove my tweet, they can revoke that, or they can go to a tribunal, which I would love to do. I'd love to question Teddy Cook and Julie Inman Grant, this e-safety commissioner.
So let's talk about this tribunal. Let's say that you do get that opportunity. What is the process in which that occurs, and what is the time frame? And by the way, let me commend you, because these people essentially have unlimited resources to censor us and try to control us through authoritarianism. And, you know, during the break, you illustrated that by the fact that this e-safety commission, you know, it was at about a $10 million budget, and now that has quadrupled in just the last week.
Well, according to the last budget, they quadrupled it. So okay. I think it's just become, people have just become aware of it. But yesterday, the prime minister was using these recent stabbings in Australia as an excuse to increase the censorship of people online. And he mentioned that they quadrupled the budget. So they're now spending $42.5 million to do what? As far as I know, they've only asked for 6 posts to be taken down in the past 2 years. What are they spending $42.5 million on? It's insane. Today they ordered down a post. They ordered a post to be taken down by Ian Miles Chong. This is a guy, I think he lives in Malaysia. And all he did was tweet out the video of the attack and some pictures from the other attack in the shopping mall. There are millions of these posts out there. You cannot censor the internet, but that's what they're trying to do. So anyway, my appeal is the first of its kind against the Sea Safety Commissioner. I think they will try to settle it, of course, before we go to a tribunal, but I'm not settling for anything. And I know they're not going to just take it down. I'd be surprised. So I'd love to go to a tribunal. We'll call lots of witnesses. I think they have to hold it within a year. But we'll see what happens. This has never been done before, so it's a little uncertain.
So we certainly are in new territory, but we're not in new territory when we talk about actual news events being censored via social media under the guise of keeping people safe. And let me say this. You know, I understand why you would take down a live stream of somebody who is live streaming themselves killing individuals, hurting individuals, etc. I get that.
Of course.
But when we are on an adult forum and we are talking about what is going on in the news, and let's be honest, you know, X has hardcore pornography on it. The last thing I want to watch is snuff films. But at the same time, if something is newsworthy and this attack occurred, that is the proper place to be sharing it, is on Twitter with other adults showing that incident. It should not be hidden from the public. And I would argue the same for international warfare. You know, it is the pictures in Vietnam that were being broadcast in this country that ultimately led to the end of us being in that conflict. So the idea that we as adults have to be protected from material that may be disturbing is not only absurd, but it is counterproductive in so many ways, Chris.
That's right. And there are rules against posting, you know, graphic gore and violence. You're supposed to put it behind a sensitive content setting. So sure, do that. But this is a huge international news story. It's all over the media everywhere. There are millions and millions of tweets about this. You can't stop all of that. It's total fruitless effort to even try. It's insane that they would even try to do that. But, you know, these tyrants, they always say that they're trying to keep you safe. That's their number one line. Justin Trudeau, same thing. Just trying to keep everybody safe. We're going to lock you all down. You're not going to be allowed to send your kids to school. You're not going to be allowed to go outside. You're not going to be able to go to the playground. We're going to put you in quarantine where you can't talk to your relatives. And in fact, you can't even go to your own mother's bed when she's dying. Because we're going to keep you all safe. These are what these tyrants do. And now they're going to control the internet. Control the internet. You are crazy if you think you can control the internet. And all that happens is, like what's happened with my post, it gets seen millions and millions of times more. So I'm very thankful that they're doing this. Now, this guy, the prime minister, he said in this press conference yesterday, "I don't look at the comments on my social media posts. If I did, it would be very difficult to go about my day-to-day activity. I think this is something that we as a society have to engage in a debate on." You are the prime minister of one of the greatest countries in the world, and you would have difficulty going about your day if you read comments online? How are you so weak in a position of such power? I get the nastiest comments every day sent to me. You couldn't even imagine. I never post them because I don't like giving them attention. But I'm just fine. I'm happy as can be. Talking to my main man, Jason Burmass here. Why is this guy running a country if he's so weak?
You know, I have to agree with you. And actually, you know, I got in this game a very, very long time ago before social media was ever encompassing. However, you know, it was brutal online, whether it was in the message boards or I remember there was this site called You're the Man Now Dog that took on me and my other filmmakers. And I always had a thick skin about it. You know, I always realized, hey, this is the internet. This isn't necessarily real life. And there are certain people that are going to make criticisms to me that are actually valid and I want to engage with. Or I think that those people are actually being, you know, real. You know, they're not trying to be fake and just put out talking points. And maybe you can talk to them. To be so arrogant that you would not want to listen to your critics as a world leader and then posit that we need to do something about those that would make commentary against world leaders is completely and utterly dystopian, and it's anti-humanity. We should be having these open conversations. And when it's the other side of the fence, when it is actual bots that are attacking you, it seems like you have the establishment politicians encouraging that behavior. So it's only a certain sect of cyberbullying that they're concerned about it. And it's really only the sect that what? That really is gravitating towards reality and not their narrative. Otherwise, people like you said, you're fair game, bro.
Well, when you're a public official writing healthcare policy and you're promoting bestiality, you're posting pictures of a dog having sex with a man, you've got a problem. And we should be calling that out. We should be condemning that. We should be stigmatizing this person. She has no place being in public health. But this e-safety commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, she's a former Twitter employee before Elon took over. She gave a talk at the World Economic Forum where she said we need to recalibrate freedom of speech, whatever that means. But this is someone who is against freedom of speech. This is someone who is a trans activist. She's a far left authoritarian who is just taking down tweets that she doesn't like. And she also has a working relationship with Teddy Cook because they've worked together on LGBTQIA+++ things in the past. So this isn't an arm's length relationship. We're requesting all the documentation and everything that we can for this case because it's certainly not going to make them look good. And honestly, that whole thing needs to be shut down. So we're getting all the people on board. They're getting a lot of pushback now, and we're waking up the country of Australia and indeed internationally a lot of people to what's going on down under.
You know, let's just talk about the fact there is no such thing as restructuring free speech. Either you have freedom of speech and freedom of thought and the ability to express that thought verbally to others without recourse or lawfare waged against you, or you do not. That's it. That's the bottom line. And, you know, they always love to go, well, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. But how many things have they equated with that analogy that have nothing to do with it? You know, whether or not we're warning people about this because it is a real thing, they've tried to say that that is hate speech. I mean, we have so many absurd talking points and headlines where I actually read the headline, yes, the conspiracy theory that they want you to eat bugs is as racist as you think it is. I don't know how warning people that we have a class of people at Davos and other institutions talking about us literally eating bugs and printed food is inherently racist. But again, this is the kind of crap that is pushed upon us, and we're expected to go along with these narratives. Otherwise, we might find ourselves on the wrong side of an e-commissioner ruling, Chris.
That's right. There are already laws on the books against inciting violence. Don't incite violence. This is simple. Yes, don't do that. Having a criticism of someone is not an incitement of violence. But like you said with the racism thing, they say that about everything. They just throw out threats and they make accusations because that silences a lot of people, because people don't want to be called a bigot. They don't want to be called a racist. So if you're against anything that the World Economic Forum is pushing, anything against Agenda 2030, any valid criticisms of climate change, any valid criticisms of this trans agenda, oh my gosh, you must be a racist, a white supremacist, and all these things. But that doesn't really work anymore. People are waking up, and we need to stop being afraid of telling the truth, because it was only in silence that this child abuse of child transition was ever able to grow in the first place. And we need to do the exact opposite. We need to be having more conversations about this, not less.
You know, how do we combat these levers of power when they seem to be ever more increasingly funded, right? You look at this, and like you said, this e-safety commission, what have they flagged? Let's give them 60 posts. Forget about six. Let's give them 10 times that, 60 posts.
60 whole posts. I could do that in a morning myself. What do they need $42.5 million for?
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you, I mean, folks, think about this right now. Let's say 60 posts, and let's give them a generous helping of $10,000 a post. That's still $600,000, which would be way too much in the first place. But we're literally seeing 18 to almost 20 times that being put forth, and no end in sight. These bureaucracies continue to grow. So how do we try to curb stomp these things out of existence? Obviously, you're doing a great job, not only shining the light on the darkness via social media and getting out into the public arena with your activism, but you're willing to take them to court. You actually want tribunal. How can we get that fervor out there with others so we can demonstrate that not only are these things absurd, inherently they're dangerous to us as a species, as humanity itself, Chris?
Well, first of all, before I forget, I want to thank the Free Speech Union of Australia, because they're helping me, and I couldn't have done this without them. But we have a culture war on our hands. The entire Western world has been like a slowly boiling frog, losing its values, forgetting what made us great in the first place. And we're under attack by an old foe. It's called communism, except this time, it's not presenting itself as communism. It's presenting itself as diversity, equity, and inclusion. What's equity? It's equality of outcome. What is equality of outcome? Marxism. Who's Karl Marx? He wrote the Communist Manifesto. These are all the same things being recycled again. We saw Eastern Europe, Asia, South America all fall to communism in the 20th century and destroyed every country that ever took part in it. And we were able to avoid that in these great Western countries. But now we're under attack. And we need a whole cultural change. So we almost need a new renaissance, because this is a massive problem. We need to wake everyone up, because you'll never vote out all these people until you make the great percentage of the population aware of what's going on. But they've been deceived into thinking that DEI and all these terms sound very nice. But they're not. It's not working. Multiculturalism is not working. This is the first time in human history we've had massive populations move around the globe with different belief systems, different value systems. And now, my gosh, in Toronto the other day, when Iran was attacking Israel, there were thousands out in the streets celebrating it. We can't tolerate that in our society. This isn't working. But it's just such a big problem. Everyone just has to do what they can do within their own field of influence and get off the couch and get going and doing something, because doing something is a whole lot better than doing nothing.
You know, just kind of closing on the fact that you mentioned equity. You know, that was a term that, you know, during my lifetime was kind of always associated with the economic markets. That's the only time we ever heard that. But you correctly identified that what equity actually means is equality of outcome. That is not a good thing. What we used to strive for in this country and in the civilized Western world was equality of opportunity. And we've never gotten to true equality of opportunity. Obviously, socioeconomic circumstances for individuals is going to matter on that path. But we came pretty damn close in this country that if you wanted to become an engineer, you could do that. If you worked hard enough, maybe you could be a professional athlete. Guess what? You could learn to code just by going on the internet or going to a state school. Now it's the complete inverse of that, because equality of opportunity doesn't guarantee you that you're actually going to learn that skill or achieve in that skill or even become the best in that. But when you take that out of the equation, it doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't matter how educated you are. And instead, it lumps us all into this authoritarian system of top-down control. We got a minute left in the broadcast. Billboard Chris, how can the audience support you?
They can follow me on X and Instagram at Billboard Chris. They can support me through my website, billboardchris.com, and they can get educated and have conversations, because one conversation at a time, we are going to put a stop to this child abuse.
You are measured, you are intelligent, and you are engaging with the public, and you're willing to stand up against the nation states of tyranny. I absolutely commend you, my friend, and appreciate you. And I appreciate you guys right here watching me on TNTRadio.live Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Remember this, guy, it's not about left or right. It is always about right and wrong. I absolutely love you guys, and we'll see you on the flip side.